agat kung nuno wejudik. Ami olak si masu wejudik. Ola nga su wejung alikiwa nga malakiblogik. Supayamus takayimulu kawani imnakoni. Bukwit yung alay sinyo ola nga su wejung.
My parents used to camp a lot a long time ago, and they owned a lot of land that they traveled on, and therefore she's limited because she used to be out camping all the time.
Deborah, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lane. Yes, Mr. Kingan.
We are watching. What? Can I keep coming all the time? Can I be the dynamic? Sabakak simarok namin ninyo ko. Asin, egalo ako na nga. Kuya na ako gulo. Suli, kayok tingin. Kuya na nga, kangiksip ka na ako na nga. Kanok, sabakak minik. Suli, kanok. 1991, ilikpan. Itilag naman ik, ukaw di ka ati ko. Tapos, isumayo mo ako. Ilan na utok ka na at kasimak pa na. Ukala di ka rapti ni itka na yaksin niya ako mo ako. Kuya na.
I want to thank the commission for the opportunity to make things a little clearer for everybody here, and also to want to thank you to make us know a little bit more about 1991 and the ramifications of that year. And he's encouraging the elders or people that are going to go to an elders conference meeting to begin to think of what they are to say at that meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Kingett. I hope you are at the Elders Conference in Barrow in August. Mr. Frankson?
Can I ask you a few questions?
Yes, would you? It's we can hardly hear you.
I wanted to ask you some questions that probably cannot be resolved legally, because it seems that we don't have any listeners when we talk about the legal status of the land. What if we were to charter the state corporation, the village corporation, under the tribal organization of Point Hope? What kind of alterations would there be? Because I know under the native village of Point Hope, the land base is a lot bigger. You go from Pygmy Gap to Ahotora, something that we have actual remains of the houses, the caches, underground cellars. If we were to recharter the village corporation and charter it under the federally recognized tribe of Native Village of Point Hope, would the amount of the land change, or would it simply fall under the jurisdiction of the Native Village of Point Hope, which is a larger land mass, about 55,000 square miles or some odd figure like that, because we're talking about a 65-mile radius.
Well, Congress said in 1971 that all Aboriginal claims to land and all Aboriginal title to land was extinguished. So I think the question is how are you going to protect the 44 million acres that Congress acknowledged that you should get in 1971? Congress has abolished your Aboriginal title to the rest of the land. So I don't see how you could get more land by doing what you suggest. You know, I'm just repeating what Congress said. I didn't do it. But that's what you're up against.
How about the border of the United States as stated by the Treaty of Sessions, and then again by the Statehood Act, and also again through the state statutes? It defines, gives the longitude and latitude of the border. How do you interpret? All I want is that we live under status quo of the law, just the way the law reads.
Well, look, you have a Fifth Amendment that says no private property can be taken without just compensation.
Yeah.
But the Supreme Court of the United States held in the 1950s that Alaska Natives had no
Fifth Amendment.
No Fifth Amendment rights. So that's why Congress was able in 1971 to extinguish your Aboriginal title. Now I'm compressing many years of legal history into two or three sentences.
Do you think that maybe...
But roughly, that's about the way it was.
Do you think that may be a violation of the agreement they have with our people, the National Security Agreement?
Well,
see, because Alaska Territorial Guards rose from there, and I know Frank Alvarsinha, I've seen his signature on that agreement of national security for us to serve as a buffer zone between Russia and the United States. And I feel that we already have an agreement with the United States and its national security. And the rest is that they cannot do anything with the land without our consent. Because I feel that with the land claims, they have broken all of the laws of a government, where they exclude children born after 1971, because I wish they would use the basis of use and occupancy, because we can prove that over and over without doing any additional studies. Radiant Larson, going back 2,000 years, is fairly sufficient.
Well, that's no doubt very important evidence, but people on the other side of this question would say to you, well, Congress had plenary power to full power to decide what should be done with the Aboriginal title of the Eskimos and the Indians in Alaska, and they abolished it. And they said, we're going to give you $962.5 million, and we're going to transfer 44 million acres of land to you, and that's what you get. Now, that's what Congress did. What concerns people today is that in 1991, a train of events might be set in motion that would mean you wouldn't hold on even to what they acknowledged in 1971 you should get. And it seems to me that's the current problem. Other people like yourself, Mr. Frankson, have raised these historical points, and they're important, is the Congress a student of history? I don't know. Maybe they would say, we made history in 1971. We abolished your title.
I wanted to ask you one question about Angska. There is a section in there that states that the village corporation would have to reselect land outside of the native town site. Now, do you think that part of the act will be implemented at all?
I can't say.
Yeah. Because there's an overlap of the claim of the corporation and the claim of the native village of Point Hope.
That point has come up, but
a provision for it.
But they
and legally, the title that the corporation have is called a fee simple title. And a fee simple title is subject to the Native Townsite Act and to the Native Allotment Act.
But that's a legal argument that would have to be decided in the U.S. courts.
Yeah. What do you think it would be worth going to taking United States problem to United States courts?
Oh, you'd have to decide.
Okay. I just want to ask you those questions. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for coming tonight and for the testimony that's been given. It's been very useful. We will be, my wife and I and Eileen our sound man will be staying till Wednesday noon. If you decide you'd like to have another hearing tomorrow or Wednesday morning, maybe you could just mention it to Eileen and me, and we can arrange it. We're going to stay till Wednesday at noon, and we'll have another hearing if you want us to, but we don't want to interfere with the Whale Festival, because we know that's very important to people here. But if there are others who wish to say something before we go, then we can arrange maybe a small hearing tomorrow sometime or Wednesday morning. And if you decide you want to do that, you could mention it to Eileen or to me, and we'll arrange that. So let me just thank you again and to say that we hope that those of you who want to come to Barrow in August when we hold a meeting there, we'll feel free to do so, that you'll be able to get there, and we will have the benefit of some more evidence from you. But it's been a useful evening, and I want to thank you all. So we'll stand adjourned. Why don't Eileen and you and I spend 5 minutes in our talking about that?
Okay, that's fine.
Here, we might have.
Another 5 minutes right now.
Sure, all right. And I'll talk to my new director and see when we're supposed to be leaving, find out what time we're leaving, and see if I can stay after.
Okay. How you doing, Debbie?
Oh, good, tired. First is the first plan that goes back.
First is rerun.
I should try to get in touch with you then by Wednesday morning.
Well, you fellas going to be up at 5:30 a.m. for the cookout?
Why? That's what it starts?
That's what I'm told.
Looks like you got about a couple of more months. No, one more month? Two more weeks?
Let's just hope. Let's hope you get back to Barrow anyway.
It's closer to Kotzebue. It's closer to Kotzebue than to Barrow.
Well, we said that we would be here this morning before leaving Point Hope in case anybody wanted to drop in and speak to the commission. So I'm glad we were able to arrange this. And without saying any more than that, maybe we could begin. And maybe you could give us your name just for the record again.
Okay. My name is Evelyn Higby from Point Hope.
Carry on.
I don't know what to say.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. First, you were born and raised here?
I was born and raised in Point Hope. I went to elementary school here. I went to high school at Mount Edgecombe. And then I went to college. I went to different colleges, U of A, one in Colorado. And then I finally graduated from Alaska Pacific University in 1973, and I went to work for North Slope Borough as planning supervisor at Barrow. I worked there for 5 years, and I quit and moved back to Point Hope, and I've been living here since.
And can you tell me whether you think that people in Point Hope are know about ANCSA, about 1991, about the implications there may be if shares in the corporations are sold, and all of those questions?
Okay. I think that a lot of people here are aware of what's going to happen in 1991. But not very many people. I think when the time comes, they'll say, how come nobody told me about it?
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll wonder how it came to that point.
If in 1991 there are no restrictions on the sale of shares, what do you think is likely to happen to the shares in the corporations? Do you think people will be interested in selling, or will they hold on to their shares? Are their shares valuable to them? Have they been receiving dividends?
I think a lot of people are changing here, and one of them is that they're more interested in money now, and I think a lot of people, some of them will sell if they know that there's a lot of money involved in it. But on the other hand, I know the people here, and if they know that they have to keep the land in order to keep the lifestyle, the way they, you know, I mean, they're hunting, you know, because it's important to have all that land if you're going to have all that those animals. And I think the people, if we give them enough time, they'll realize that, you know, that land they have to keep that land if they want to keep their lifestyle. A lot of people here can't live without the food, the Eskimo food that you know, the land provides. I think if they have a choice between that, they would choose subsistence. To continue the way they are living now. You know, the whales and the caribou and the seals and both the land and the sea animals. But some people can get greedy too. You know, you can't tell somebody not to sell their land if they're going to benefit from it. But I think as a group from Point Hope, they would try to save their land. People here know where their boundaries are. We've always had a boundary.
You mean the Point Hope people. Boundary of their tribal land, so to speak.
Of where they can hunt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know where the best caribou hunting places, they know where to get the eggs, they know where to find the wolves, the wolverine, you know, in their area. And they've always fought for their land. I think they'll fight for it again if they have to.
Tell me about the extent to which, in your own observations, you spent 5 years working for the borough in Barrow, and you know a lot about these places. What you went away, you obtained a university degree, and you've come back. What's your observation about the extent to which younger people who go away to be educated return to the village? Are many of them returning, staying here, raising families? What's the situation?
I think they are. I think they're coming back. If you were born and raised here, it's hard to go somewhere and try to live there. It's harder. You know, because you lived here all your life, and if you try to go outside and try to change, it's hard. It takes years and years to change, and I think they always end up coming back here. They'll come back here to live and to work, because a lot of the younger people are working now. They can't live without the jobs. There's some families that are, part of them are subsisting and part of them are working. That's how they have to keep their subsistence. But I think they're coming back. I mean, the younger people are coming back to live here. They'll go back and forth wherever their jobs are, but as soon as there's jobs available, they'll come back here.
The Act also provides that after 1991, the land that's held by the corporations can be taxed. Do you have any concerns about that?
I think there'll be a lot of forfeitures. I mean, you know, people won't pay their taxes. It's already happening right now. A lot of the people are getting notices that, you know, they're not paying their taxes, and they're not very happy about it.
Those are lands that they occupy as individual families in the village. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, the city lots. Yeah. The borough has power to tax, and we're on borough boundaries, so we have to pay the taxes like the oil companies, and some people are not paying their taxes.
One other thing that people have raised around the state is this. Children born since 1971 have no right to be enrolled as shareholders in their corporations. They may take shares by inheritance from their parents, but they have no right to be enrolled. Have you any views on that?
I don't think that's fair at all. Just because you were born later, that doesn't mean you're not native. And I think that's what land claims it's all about. You know, it's for all natives, not the ones that are just born after 1971. That's the way I feel about that. If it was up to me, it'd be everybody. You know, but I guess you have to draw the line someplace. If we extend it, it'll go on and on and on forever. But if it's land, I don't think it's. And if we could, if it's land and if we could keep it, I think it'd be all right. You know, because a lot of people try to gain money, you know, monetary gain from land claims. And I don't think that should be the purpose of the land claims. I think it should be something that the people, as a person and as a group, can hold on to. Especially here, because this is a real old village. It's a real old village. And if everybody starts selling land, we won't have anything. And I hope the people here understand that. I think if we educate them about it, I think they would.
Yeah. Anything else that you wanted to mention?
Let's see. I don't know. Maybe about education.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Does the land claim has anything to do with the people's education directly?
Well, not directly, but.
Everybody else is always responsible for our education, BIA and state and. It's never the people here. And when they say they're going to educate them, they plan to do all these, you know, like him and I and everybody's supposed to be educated now. And a lot of the kids here are not. They graduate and they don't even know how to read. Or they haven't mastered the English language. And both of them, English and Eskimo language. And I was wondering if somewhere in the land claims they put that, you know, they're going to educate the people.
Well, no, that's really not part of land claims, but it's... It has a connection in this sense that we've been trying to find out as we go around the state whether or not the schools have been teaching the children about the history of land claims and about ANCSA and about the provisions of ANCSA that they should know a little bit about as we approach 1991. In that sense, there's a connection, and of course, there's another connection in the sense that the better people are educated, the better people they, the better equipped they are to handle their own affairs. So, but there's nothing in ANCSA about land claims.
If you're gonna turn over that responsibility to the people, they should know about it. They should know that. They should know some about land. They should know how to manage it. They should make policies. They should know how to make policies. Like for example, there's a spot up there where everybody hunts. It should be a policy that nobody claims that land and just use it for everybody. I don't mean National Park or Wildlife Service. I mean for the people, mm-hmm. their own policy, and they write down what they want to use it for and enforce it themselves. And they have to have the skills to do that.
But you have the borough, you have the ASRC, you have village corporations. Each one has its own lands department. Did you say you were on the advisory council for the school here?
Mm-hmm. For the North Sobor School District.
Do they teach anything about ANCSA in the school curriculum?
They weren't, but they were supposed to start.
Oh, I see.
They don't have that in the schools, I don't think. I think they have some in some of the schools. That's Canadian.
Anything else that you'd like to mention?
How about 14C?
Sure.
14C, at one time we thought we didn't get any land claims, native allotments. Some of us didn't get any because we were at school. And we thought maybe, wow, here's our chance, 14C. But I guess there's some restrictions on that too. 14C, you have to be a business in order to apply for that.
Well, the first step is for the corporation to transfer the land to the city, and then it becomes city land to be dealt with in one way or another. The corporations are, however, under ANILCA, entitled to make 1.5 acre sites available for homes. But without going into those legal complications, what is your concern about 14C? I mean, what is your objective?
Am I eligible for it?
Well, I couldn't answer that. I think that's a question that has to be determined once the city receives the land from the village corporation.
When will that be?
Well, that's up to them.
They can drag on forever and ever.
I don't know. That's between them. We know that a lot of the transfers under 14C haven't yet been made. Some have been made, and. But I can't tell you whether or not you'd be eligible. That would be for the city to consider in the light of ANCSA. Mm-hmm. But the village corporations under ANILCA are now entitled to make home sites available.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's all I got.
Well, thanks very much. Thank you.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll write to you when I have any more questions.
Good. Yeah, please do.
I'm Clement Frankson, and I'm speaking on as a concerned citizen. Okay, we could see the impact, you know, that in the state of confusion where it left some of our people on the effects of the Land Claim Settlement Act. And especially with the elders, I could see their state of confusion. They're trying to adjust to this new way of life. But with myself, I'm changeable. I can adjust because, you know, I'm aware of, I got the education and I speak fluent.
For the record, you're the mayor, Mr. Franks.
Yes, I am. And after listening to all this, the testimonies given, I guess it's especially hard with the elders as their lifestyle is changing and they're dealing with the corporations, you know, these that have developed after the Land Claim Settlement Act, and their lifestyle has changed there, and obtaining land has changed. Before, you know, they didn't have, well, now we could see there's even little disputes now on land. It was pretty evident on these testimonies that were given a couple of days ago. I mean,
there was dispute about native allotments.
Yes, yeah.
that I remember. Yes.
And subsistence, their subsistence life, hunting, is also, I think, had an effect. We heard about, you know, they're giving their testimony on, like, the quota of the whale. And I guess they thought, you know, well, isn't that affecting also from the Land Claims Act, where they're giving quotas now to the whale?
Well, the whaling quotas are really enforced by the federal government of the United States under the International Whaling Commission, an international body. I think that the connection between whaling and land claims is that the right to take whales is limited and limited year after year, that the subsistence hunting that the people pursue over their land becomes more and more important. And that, of course, depends on retaining that land and having access to it for subsistence.
Okay, and now they're, with the corporation dealing in also the shares, now they're, you know, this was something new to them, well, especially with the elders, having shares in a corporation and, you know, getting dividends off of it. And now they're talking about that they'll be eligible in 1991 to be sold to whoever offers them money. Now, a lot of them are confused over this, too, and a lot of them that are aware of, you know, the concerns, saying, okay, if our shares are bought, say, 51% of our shares in a corporation are sold, and, you know, whoever buys them is going to be the ones that have a say-so on it. And I guess they're aware of this, and that's why they're... well, some people are saying they're, you know, scared because of 1991, where their shares will be eligible. And then when this come about, they're afraid that the younger, I guess our younger generation, the ones that have shares, will just be readily, you know, willing to sell it. And I guess that was the point too that was made by some person here that was given testimony, and he was concerned, saying that how could we, can we restrict, you know, from selling our shares? And I think he had a good point there, where he was concerned that, I'm also concerned, I could see that if that should come about in 1991 and our shares are eligible, I could see the younger generation, you know, if they need some ready cash, you know, there's an oil company or somebody that's got the money, an outsider, to get that share.
You know, Mr. Frankson, one of the things we run into is that people who come to the hearings say that they're worried that other people might sell their shares, but there aren't very many people who come to the hearings who say that they themselves would sell their shares. What do you think? You're concerned about the young people selling their shares, but what about people like yourself? What do you think they would do?
Well, it's hard to say. I guess we just can't get a can't dig around in somebody else's mind as, yeah, as how they feel. But with myself, I. Before, you know, during the time after the Land Settlement Act was in effect, and then they come up with the corporation, we start getting the shares, I didn't much care, you know, what was happening at the time. I was still pretty young then. And then later on, as I find out, you know, the importance of holding a share, a stock in a corporation, I start to... got me thinking, and now, you know, most of the natives under the Land Settlement Act, after the corporations have been developed, they got shares. And now they're opening up business, just where they're profiting. And I could see the importance of it, being a native and holding a share as a native person in the native corporations. I don't think I would be willing to, you know, sell it. And I would encourage my kids also to do the same thing. I mean, I would stress the points of importance of keeping your share in your native corporations.
What about relations between the village corporation here and the town or the city council? How has that worked out? They have most of the land, I suppose, and the city council has certain responsibilities. How have relations been with the native corporations, if you're able to say in a general way?
Okay, right now, I guess the only landowners are the corporation, and the city, and the borough. And, well, things have been pretty hard, you know, in trying to understand the situation on the land. And like I said, you know, it left us in a state of confusion also with dealing with land, where before, you know, we we really didn't have anything like this, putting it on paper and legally dealing with it. All the before, I guess, you were able to hunt anywhere you want. You were able to set your house anywhere you want. And so it's pretty hard to say. It's a difficult question to answer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, why don't... Go ahead.
How did the Talmud groups and the Unisys become?
How did they what?
Remember when they used to own their land?
Oh, for?
Talmud groups.
Their land?
They just built wherever they were.
You mean their festival grounds? I guess that was, I'm not familiar with that. I imagine they, you know, they'd be free to settle.
Yeah, it'd be a good thing to look into.
Yeah. I don't know if they have I don't know if they disputed over it or if they agree on just getting, you know, a section for each qali. I don't know.
Can you tell us about that?
Okay. Well, I'm not familiar with how, you know, like Evelyn mentioned here, the Qalgis, the festival grounds were each, what they call them. Is there any... Muming Nakpayim Maka, Kalgis and Wasiksikak, they got
Camino.
English names.
Camino. Well, that's where they used to teach their kids. That's where they Camino. Manage the land. Mm-hmm. That's where they and that's where they used to take care of mommy. The court.
Okay, I'm not too familiar with this, but the Qalgis, I guess, were the places where they gathered together and teach their kids, you know, on facts of life in our lifestyle. But I can't elaborate on this. I'm not too familiar.
The one other thing maybe you could mention or refer to is right now the state can't tax undeveloped land held by the native corporations, but after 1991 the state could impose taxes on any native corporation land, developed or undeveloped, so they would have the power after 1991 to impose tax even on subsistence lands. The last witness, Ms. Higby, said that there was a problem already for individuals about paying taxes to the borough. What do you think would be the what do you think the situation would be if the if the native corporations had to pay tax on undeveloped lands, that is, subsistence lands that they hold, would they be able to manage that?
I believe so, but, you know, there would also be, I guess, resentment on it. Like, when we first were taxed, I guess a lot of people were resent on, you know, from being taxed from the North Slope Borough because Well, our feeling still exists as, you know, this is our land and this is where we grew up, this is where we our forefathers had established our residency by subsistence. And this taxing thing, I don't think they'll really get over this for a long time, because of their belief in their right, not, you know, their, maintaining their stability in this, you know, in the ground we've stomped on, our forefathers had stomped on. So I don't know.
Why don't you come over here?
Especially when we don't have, what kind of benefits we get from paying taxes? We've been trying to get running water for a long time. We don't have that. I guess the only thing we got is housing, right?
A lot of housing, yes.
You mean taxes to the borough? The well, tell me what you were talking about a minute ago about the Kalis.
Kalis. You know, there's not very many people up here, and we don't have that natural instinct to go out and try to get land like Lower 48. Everybody, you know, if you have the money, you get the land, right, down there. And we don't have that drive because we don't treat our land like that. Then all of a sudden we're going to have to do that. And I think that's bad. But what I was talking about is a different kind of management, I guess I'm talking about, where the people manage their own land the way they think is right, the way they feel comfortable with it. Right now, with the taxes, they're not happy with that. They'd rather not pay taxes. But on the other hand, they can't expect the benefits, if you know. But the people voted here for the North Slope Borough, so they must have knew what to expect, you know, because whoever sold it to them probably promised them what they gave us today, this school building, what else, public health service, the water project, the roads, the new houses, all that stuff. But the side effects are, you know, like the taxes, and the people are not happy with that. What I think is, you know, the people should get together and decide how they want to manage it, exactly how. Everybody got to get real serious about it and get down and work on that. I think what I was trying to say was the Khalgis, you know, they had, before anybody came, they had all that responsibility to teach their kids. They teach them how to hunt, how to cook, how to do all of that at home by themselves. They didn't need anybody else. And they learn how to use new technology in their hunting, you know, they get better and better, and that's how they taught their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they managed land was, it wasn't even that important, because there was no hardly any people to fight for the land, to, you know, pachak for land. Everybody, you know.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
Uh-huh.
On managing.
Mm-hmm. But the way it was they, if somebody wanted to build a house, they go build wherever they want. But they didn't build oil wells and stuff. I don't know, maybe it's not a very good idea after all. because you know, they change too. But I think that's where it should start, is from scratch, where, you know, with the people, to figure out how to manage it. I like the Kali style, where they don't you could build anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that could be dealt with through our corporation, where they, you know, deal with land. If that could be introduced, and maybe.
Because right now, if you ask them to express their feelings publicly about the lands, they won't. You know, because remember, the city was trying to sell the land to the people that owned the lot, claimed the lots, but they didn't bid for them.
Well,
a lot of them didn't bid for them.
No, that was not the case.
Didn't they?
There was no such thing as, you know, cities trying to sell lots. Because if city's going to have sell a lot, you have to put it into three public places on notice. If you have to put it on a bid.
It was on the board for how
okay,
many
this,
months?
This was a different arrangement that they make, you know,
but that's the process.
Mm-hmm. There was a stipulation made on there. A stipulation made on there for the persons that had the lots, you know. Well, this was kind of a wavering yard. You know, they had some lots over at the old town site. And they were kind of wavering that lot in order to get this one here you're sitting on, or your new house is sitting on. Because Point Hope moved from the point here.
Well, I'm talking about, you know, like Amos Lane, he had block something, lot something, and he was supposed to bid for it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I'm not aware
everybody
of
had
the individual lots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a few that's got individual lots, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Maybe a couple. Amos and John, I think.
When did the village move from the old site to this new site?
77?
What, 75 or 76?
And the new site is where the native allotment is, isn't it? One of the native allotments?
Yeah, there's a...
There's two of them on the lots here,
mm-hmm.
Town site.
There's two? I think there's just one.
Oh, there's one?
Yeah, there's just one.
Well, you had the floor... Mr. Frankson, anything else that you wanted to cover?
Okay, I just want to express my concern on the testimonies that was given on the impact that has, you know, befallen our people. There was a younger person here that spoke here and gave her testimony, saying that she wanted some land, like when they were giving out the allotments, and she didn't know what was happening. She thought she was eligible also for, you know, an allotment.
I was at school. I was getting educated.
And these are some of the confusions and, well, that, you know, leave our people in this position, a lot, especially the elders. Our concern, I guess, have been mainly with our elders, because they were our forefathers' generation. And I guess the impact had a greater confusion with them. Their lifestyle, you know, had to change right now. And their dealings in, like, land, like, t- taxing and shares, stuff like this, that was completely just dropped on them. Like I said with myself, I think I could adjust pretty well in what's happening.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I'll just emphasize on that, Clement. I think the older people here would never ever let the land go. I think it's the younger people, the ones that want to make money. And that's the thing nowadays, is to make money. And, you know, eventually they'll start handling a large amount of money. And that's a new thing, too. Besides owning land and paying taxes, is, you know, handling large amount of money. That's all.
Clement, C-L-E-M-E-N-T?
Yes.
Anything else?
I guess that's all I wanted to say. I know, you know, everything will come back later on again after I walk out of here. Oh no, I should have said this. I forgot it. But I guess we've got an opportunity here where we could write to you.
Sure, you could write to the commission, and Eileen is leaving cards here, and people can come to Barrow in early August, August 6th, 7th, and 8th. We'll have meetings then. So I just want to thank you both very much.